sister, I'm keeping my eyes on you. I bet you think I don't know nothing but singing the blues. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're something too.
So shake your shimmy, sister, 'cause honey, this sugar is feeling fine.
Good morning, this is Women, Body and Soul, 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York City, streaming live online at WBAI.org, and I'm your host, Natalie Tondiway. On the agenda today is our interview with guest Joycelyn Campbell of Domestic Workers United, DWU. Founded in 2000, DWU consists of Caribbean, Latina, and African nannies, housekeepers, and elderly caregivers in New York City, organizing for fair labor standards and to end exploitation. Domestic Workers United was founded with the collaboration of Asian social justice and workers' rights organizations and coordinates with the New York Domestic Workers Justice Coalition. Welcome to Women, Body, and Soul, Joycelyn. It's an honor to have you with us.
It's a pleasure.
This show on domestic laborers is actually in honor of International Working Women's Day and Women's History Month, which are both in March. And I wanted to have this conversation as we reflect on women's accomplishments and challenges, because I think it's important to remember the most vulnerable segment of our economy, which is women in largely unregulated domestic labor, ranging from paid household workers to those who are actually experiencing slavery with no pay and violence or threats. And, you know, every day women provide labor running other families' households, doing related chores and caring for children and the disabled, the ill, or the elderly. And this work is so essential to the well-being and functioning of so many families. And also it's essential to the motherland economies of immigrant domestic workers, contributing to the over $167 billion a year immigrants worldwide send home from their wages. Yet this labor is so often looked down upon. How many women are estimated to be working as domestics in the United States and here in New York?
Actually, from the survey we've done, there are over 200,000 domestic workers within New York and the greater metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm. And generally, we speak of women when we talk about domestic workers. Is there a segment of this labor market that men work in?
If any, there are about 1%.
1%. Okay, so it really is, it's women that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I describe domestic workers as nannies, housekeepers, and elderly caregivers, language that Domestic Workers United uses. Are there other types of domestic jobs that are not mentioned in that list?
It is, actually, we talk about the domestic workers, the nannies, the housekeepers, and the elderly caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the people that work in the homes
mm-hmm.
are considered domestic workers.
Uh-huh. And, you know, words have so much weight, and I've always been suspicious of the word nanny. Somehow it smacks of some sort of feudal or plantation or caste hierarchy language. And in the U.S., you know, the word nanny stems from a slang referring to a child's nurse or an aunt or another female caregiver. And also as a verb, it's meant to be protective. But I know that in other places, this word doesn't have that same meaning. And I'm just curious, what does the word nanny carry for domestic child care providers? Is that a word that they want us to use? Or, you know, what are the feelings around that?
The feelings from the word really is, like you said before, protection. Mm-hmm. And actually the person that take care of the child. Mm-hmm. Normally some people refer it to as the child care provider or the child caregiver.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what is the average wage for domestic workers in the U.S.?
Actually, there is no fixed rate for the domestic and the nanny, domestic worker in the U.S. because actually it's kind of an up and downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the issues that we are addressing within the Domestic Workers United.
And in some of the statistics I've looked at, the you know, that do look at averages and wages for domestics, there are calculations anywhere between 98 cents per hour to $3 per hour. Does that seem accurate for the New York area?
Yes, you said 90 cents, but In some cases, the calculation, it is less than 90 cents.
Mm-hmm. And what's the average work day and work week for domestic workers in the U.S.?
The average work day in, I would say, is about 6 days per week, and totally more than 40 hours, sometimes 50 hours or 60 hours.
40 to 60 hours.
Yeah.
I was watching the ABC TV news segment called Berating the Nanny that is actually linked to on the Domestic Workers United website. And the segment features scenarios with a black nanny and a white nanny. In each scenario, they're being berated by the employer mother as well as the daughter that she's in charge of. And a couple of things struck me in watching the scenario. Bystanders actually did intervene in all of the scenarios. And but what was interesting is that nearly all of them in their protest, when you know they were telling the employer she was being abusive, when the employer challenged her, everyone's response was, well, this should be done in private, not in public, or in the street, not in this restaurant. And then the other thing that struck me is that no one was sure what to do. And I was disturbed by all of it, and I'm curious, how characteristic of employers is this kind of verbal abuse and domination, according to domestic workers?
Yes, there's a lot of abuse and exploitation within the industry. And simply, as you know, most this is because the domestic workers are isolated with the homes. And yes, true, a lot of the unthinkable happen. Mm-hmm. Domestic workers are abused both verbally, physically, emotionally, and even as far I can go to say as sexually.
What I found interesting was that when people were in the back and forth with the abusive employer, this idea that, you know, they would say to her, well, if you're going to do this, I don't think you should do this, but if you're going to do this, it needs to be done in private, or, you know, you should do this somewhere else other than here, almost as if they were saying, well, I really do believe you have the right to do this, but it should be done in the privacy of your own home. And I'm curious about that attitude. I thought it was pretty shocking that people were okay with the abuse if it was done in private. And is that an attitude that seems to be pervasive amongst employers and people?
Yes, that is pervasive. And this stands back as far as the history of the domestic industry, which dates back as far as the 1500s to the 1700s. And as you may know that when the Europeans took over the land, and they had the maids. This work was then called black woman's work, mm-hmm. and most of the domestic workers are immigrants and people of color, and this really goes back to then. And then the wives of the homes felt they were the ladies of the houses, and the nannies, we would call them the servants at that time, they were subjected to physical abuse and, you know, and being told that they had to sleep, most of them, in the master's house looking after their children. They were vulnerable to the sexual abuse. And this is something that was done internally all the time, and it was never really addressed because people grew along believing this is what should happen. You know, and you can't speak. And being that most of these people, most of us are immigrants that, you know, are in the country, and some of are bought here under certain circumstances, like involuntary servitude and such like that, people feel that they have no rights to speak out. So that is where the advantages take upon the people, like in the when the foreign, even the citizens and the foreign nationals, like the diplomats, bring people into this country, the visas they're given states that these people that they bring into the country to work as domestic must stay within their employ. Mm-hmm. So people feel they have to be putting up with this type of treatment within the home.
Mm-hmm. And what rights do domestic workers have, in particular those who have immigrated here from other places, and this is not their home country, and they may be here on visas or even illegally? What kind of recourse do they have when they face that sort of abuse?
Actually, as in the status with their visas, they have no rights.
Mm.
Because the visas normally requires that domestic workers remain with their original employer or face deportation.
So even if their employers are...
And abusing them, then their chance is to either be deported or be on the outside. And then some of them are kicked out if they actually protest. Mm-hmm. Because remember now, they fall under another form of debt bondage.
Mm-hmm.
Because their passages are paid for them to come into the country. Mm-hmm. They're provided with housing and they're provided with food.
Mm-hmm.
So this debt bondage means that they're working to pay back the airfare and the food and the housing. So it increases daily. So there's no way working at that time, that wage that they pay them, because some of these people, even the diplomats, when they bring the people here, they promise them one wage, and they paid something like $200 per month.
Mm-hmm.
We've got cases in this country that diplomats are facing these allegations. And this means that when they kick out on the street, they don't have no way to go, and they don't have any money.
And now their visa is invalid because they're no longer within its terms by working for that employer.
Right.
And are there organizations that have been able, like rights organizations that have been able to step up in that gap and provide any sort of protection or negotiate for workers who find themselves, you know, falling through that crack?
Yes. Domestic Workers United is one of those organizations. And Damayan,
mm-hmm.
And then you have Andolan, and
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of domestic organizations that have stepped up and represented these workers. And simply because, as it stands right now, there's no legal protection really for the domestic workers. In fact, domestic workers are excluded from the national labor laws. There are only two things that actually represent the domestic workers. That's the Minimum Wage Act,
mm-hmm.
and only in New York, the overtime. You know, because domestic workers are excluded from fair labor standards. They're not covered, not even on the Occupational Safety and Health Act, despite the fact that they deal with a lot of hazardous chemicals. You know, even the civil rights law, you know, it's not really protected for the domestic workers. So, you know, that's why we at Domestic Workers United have actually drafted a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that Bill of Rights includes overtime pay, health care, annual cost of living adjustment, paid sick days, vacation and holidays, advance notice of termination, severance pay, discrimination protection, and rights violation enforcement.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm curious, when I read through the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, which my understanding is it's going to be voted on in Albany within the next month.
Actually, the bill was passed in the assembly, out of the Assembly Labor Committee,
mm-hmm.
on February the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And on March the 9th, it was passed out of the Senate Labor Committee.
Mm-hmm. And what's the next step?
The next step is that they go to both floors,
mm-hmm.
for a vote,
okay,
and
so
then
there's one
from there
vote.
On, it should go to the governor.
And, you know, I was so curious, as I read the, you know, the benefits in the bill, it sounds great, you know, the paid sick days, vacation and holidays, advance notice of termination, severance, you know. But then a part of me wondered, these are protections that actually aren't provided to in many full-time legal, so to speak, legal jobs. And I was wondering, well, who will be able to afford to hire full-time domestic care with these kinds of requirements? And I was just curious, has that been part of the conversation as you have developed this legislation and pushed it forward and look forward to a point? Obviously, the hope is that the legislation will pass. And so do you look forward to that point when it passes, and how are you preparing to deal with employers saying, I can't afford this?
Actually, there are a lot of employers that are willing to, that have supported this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of employers out there that know these are the right things for the domestic workers.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, there are employers now that are being organized to social and economic justice. Employers have expressed their satisfaction with what is in the bill,
mm-hmm.
and they need to do the right thing. And they're also calling on legislators in Albany to do the right thing, which is pass the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, domestic workers just wanted to be treated fairly. They wanted to have the respect and dignity and the recognition for the work that have been, they have, you know, be actually dehumanized so long ago for. In actual fact, we are the ones that really look after the price possession of these people, allowing them to go about their professions.
Absolutely.
And the way that we are treated, let me just give you a little insight of my involvement into Domestic Workers United. You know, when I first came to this country, I was enrolled in the Allen School of Nursing, pursuing my career in nursing. And I was doing, I was a nanny on the, you know, to supplement. And that way, I took a job in Manhattan with a family. And this family, they had one little girl and two dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was made to wear a white uniform like Florence Nightingale,
mm-hmm.
white shirt, white pants, white shoes. And one of those dogs had cancer. And they went out and they bought a double stroller. And, you know, as I speak to you, you get the picture.
The I'm wondering if the dogs were in the stroller.
The little girl one side. And I'm pushing the two of them through the streets of Manhattan.
The
and
two dogs.
Dehumanized me. And it made me realize that the most of these employers underestimate the intelligence of the immigrants, the people who migrate to this country, because the economic pressure that was placed on our countries forced us to come here to look for betterment, to support our families that we left back home.
Mm.
Despite the fact that we have some very important jobs within our country. You know, so this made me realize that something had to be done. People have to be educated, like, you know, to the, what is going on with this industry. And we who are involved in the industry have the right to be treated as human beings. And this work has got to be recognized as real work.
Absolutely. This is Women, Body, and Soul, 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York City. We're streaming live online at WBAI.org, and we're talking about the conditions that domestic workers face and their labor rights movement with Joycelyn Campbell of Domestic Workers United. You know, one of the things you mentioned that right now, as it stands, domestic workers do have rights to minimum wage and overtime. But I'm curious, the scenario you talked about, those workers who are here basically as indentured servants or in debt bondage and they're on work visas, do they also have the right to minimum wage and overtime? Because it sounds like they're definitely not being granted that right.
Yeah, they have the right to minimum wage, but because there are no set guidelines or protection for the domestic workers,
mm-hmm.
They're left at the whim of the employers, mm-hmm. and the employers get away with that.
Okay.
But another thing that we have to realize, that in this country, ever since the days of slavery, there have been two groups of people who has been exploited and abused tremendously, and that is the farm workers and the domestic workers.
Absolutely.
And to this day, not even in the labor laws of this country does the word employee refer to the domestic worker or the farm worker. We are even excluded from that word. That's why to this day we remain the domestic worker and the farm worker.
Mm. And I was thinking about that when you were describing the rights that you were advocating for in the struggles. I was thinking to myself, this does sound very parallel to the rights struggle of farm workers and agricultural workers in this country. You know, one of the things I'm just wondering in terms of personal sort of civic responsibility of one human being to another, when I was watching those scenarios of the berating the nanny segment, on the DW website, which is actually from ABC TV News, I wondered what public response from bystanders would be helpful to a domestic worker who is facing an abusive situation, whether it's being berated by an employer or a charge, or clearly just by looking and assessing the situation, you can tell that someone is in some sort of bondage. How should bystanders respond? What would be appropriate and what would be helpful?
Well, actually, one, these things should be documented and sent to the legislators in Albany. There should be actually greater public response, like in the newspapers, you know, challenge it, like ABC, they have it on the website. Channel your comments and what you think should have been done. And the least is to intervene in the protection of the domestic, the nanny. You know, show some kind of... I know what you're talking about. I know the guy that he kind of backed off after the employer started, but he should have been more persistent.
Well, everyone felt that ultimately, even though they felt... It was almost as if everyone felt that the employer was behaving badly and that ultimately she did have the right to abuse, but just not to make a spectacle.
Well, that's why we are going to educate them that this is not the way, and we've had a lot of cases. We've had cases where nannies have been really abused. And the thing that really, really upsets me is that you've often heard about the nanny who did this to the child. You see it in the paper, the nanny who did this to the child. We've got a domestic worker who was physically abused by her employer about 2 to 3 months ago. And the doorman stepped in. He took the pictures of the abuses. The neighbor in the building called the police and everything. And this was not highlighted in the newspaper.
No, I didn't hear about that.
You see, so now you're hearing about it. So it is issues like these that need to come out. Certain things are exposed. And when it comes to, like, the nanny, they're, you know, kind of withheld. And the truth has got to be told. And then, therefore, we are the ones, like when I speak, I speak for the over 200,000 domestic workers out there who are afraid to speak, who doesn't have a voice. I am the voice for the voiceless. The organization is the voice for the voiceless. It's a place where these domestic workers, too, when they're, even before they're abused, they can come. We don't only advocate towards the injustices that are being done to the domestic workers. We educate the members of the organization.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about this domestic worker being abused is that the mainstream public conversation about domestic child care workers is a conversation around the quality of the labor force. And often you'll hear parents complaining that they can't find good at-home child care providers or that they see providers out in the streets on their cell phones ignoring and neglecting children, or that providers just don't seem that interested in the work or have the skills to provide the nurturing and stimulation that parents are seeking when they're interviewing. You know, that's what they're coming across. Or that these are people who just can't find work elsewhere, and that's what the labor pool is clouded by. And I'm just wondering, how do we address that controversy so that we can elevate the debate beyond the concerned parent versus the inadequate, uneducated provider? And because this is a staged conflict that is being set up by those who dominate the conversation, and that it's being kept focused there. So how do we address that tension and that issue around the quality of this labor force and the quality of childcare so that we can get to the bigger underlying systemic and hierarchical issues that are here?
Now, my suggestion is to some of these mothers who express the concerns of nannies on cell phones to speak up to some of their friends who have nannies. Why I say that is because some of these employers give their nannies cell phones, and the nannies is expected to walk with that cell phone wherever they go. And the parent is constantly contacting the nanny, no matter where she is, 24/7 if they're working on that cell phone. The nanny is expected to answer that cell phone whenever it rings. If she doesn't answer the cell phone, she has to be, you know, explaining to the boss why I didn't answer that phone. And, you know, she goes on, but you should have answered it. I've had that experience. But it was my cell phone. And the point is that I was going to work on the train, and I missed my stop. And I called my employer, and I told her that I had missed my stop. And she kept calling back my cell phone all the time. And I did not answer it. And when I got on the job, and she said, I was calling your cell phone, and you would not answer it. I said, that's my cell phone. And if you want me to answer a cell phone whenever you ring it, you'll give me one and pay the bill. No, so you mean I had to be really upfront with her.
Mm-hmm.
But I was simply say about 80% of the domestic workers, the nannies out there, are given cell phones by their employers so that they could be in constant contact with the children. And those employers know it, and they call the domestic workers. They don't know, care if they're in the street, if they're in the playground, wherever they are, they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And two, along of the line of children being given all of this care, we are the nurses to the children. We are the teachers to the children. We educate those children when we go into the homes. And and there are lots of employees who can tell you that. I work with kids, and I can tell you that most of my kids, the kids that I work with, all of them, I've worked with three families, and they can tell you the benefit of the kids, because my last kid that I look after, before I leave that the industry to take up this job as a full-time organizer, at the age of 3 years, he was spelling his name, he was counting to 100, he could have add and everything, that his parents were amazed, mm-hmm. and it was only because I was teaching him, he wasn't going to school.
Mm. And I think, that's so important to share that example. And I, as a parent, I have come to the conclusion that this demand that this labor pool be somehow above and beyond any other labor pool is an unrealistic demand, because I'm also an employer. And the reality is, when you interview people for jobs, you're exposed to a wide range of people and skill levels, and it's the same thing. It's a labor pool. And just because these people work with children doesn't mean that all of them are qualified. It doesn't mean that all of them are good at it. But we would never look at any other labor pool, whether it was administrative assistants or, IT workers, and decide that because not all of them are the best, that the entire pool is worthless. So I also think that, parents and the people who are critiquing this labor pool need to check in with realistic expectations and see how much of this is really about class conflict and hierarchy and control, because there is no perfect labor pool is actually what it's about. And we can't hold this labor pool to any different standard than any other labor pool. And it's really our job, for those of us who are parents and employers who want to work with people from this labor pool, it's our job to take on the onus of screening them, training them, and making sure that we have hired the people who are the best for the job for us, and that we are training them, and that we have a back and forth dialogue. Because your point is well taken, that many of these people are actually, they've been doing this for a long time. They do have something to contribute. So you can't disparage them because you've seen another nanny who is not of the same caliber.
Yes, that's true. And, when we think about we go into their homes and we work with the children, and sometimes we have to be educating the new mothers, and even sometimes a mother who may have a kid before, as to the do's and don'ts about the kids, And there's things like these that need to be highlighted in the sense of the fact that when these people have people that are doing great jobs and they can fire a nanny without, after 2 and 3 years, for no reason at all, without any explanation, you work until the Friday, you go home, and they call you and tell you they don't need your services any longer. They've gotten someone who can do the job for less.
And hold on to that, because we're about to take a break. You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI Pacifica Radio New York. I'm your host, Natalie Tandiwe. This is Women, Body, and Soul. Our guest today, Joycelyn Campbell of Domestic Workers United.
So close.
gospel choir. And you are listening to BAI New York, BAI New York, San Bonani.
Early in the morning, she rises. Woman's work is never done, and it's not because she doesn't try. She's fighting a battle with no one on her side. Oh, she rises up in the morning, and she works till we past us. Woman better slow down, or she's gonna come down hard. Woman's work is never done.
Welcome back. This is Women, Body, and Soul. Today we're talking with Joycelyn Campbell of Domestic Workers United. And that was actually Tracy Chapman, an oldie but goodie, Women's Work. And I want to, Joycelyn, there's something we do on the show called the A-List, and that's where we talk about the activists and advocates who are out there on behalf of the issue that we're discussing in the show. And I know that at Domestic Workers United, you have been working very hard on the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, and I just want to let people know how they can support you. Right now, DW is demanding the New York State Legislature to support this bill and to continue supporting it. It's the first of its kind nationally. The bill provides for overtime, health care, cost of living adjustment, paid sick days, vacation and holidays, advance notice of termination, severance pay, discrimination protection and rights violations enforcements. And throughout April, there's a week in April, the week of April 23rd, there will be events co-sponsored by the National Domestic Workers Alliance. And it's called A Week of Action. And the events will be held in New York City, Long Island, and Albany. And the details are listed on the DW website, which is domesticworkersunited.org. And then also I want to tell you about some other activists and advocacy organizations that are out there that you can support or get involved with. There's the Committee Against Anti-Asian Violence, CAAV. And their website is CAAV.org, and it's a Pan-Asian Workers Organization of Women, low-wage service workers in the Bronx. There is Andolan Organizing South Asian Workers, which is at Andolan, A-N-D-O-L-A-N.net, an organization of low-income South Asian workers, primarily domestic workers. They're based in Jackson Heights, New York. There's also Unity House Cleaners, a worker-run cooperative of house cleaners in Long Island. Their website is workplaceprojectny.org. That's workplaceprojectny.org. And, of course, there's Domestic Workers United, the featured organization, which our guest today represents. And it's comprised of Caribbean, Latina, and African nannies, housekeepers, and elderly caregivers in New York, organizing for fair labor standards, again, on the web at domesticworkersunited.org. And then I just want to share, kind of do a Sisterhood is Global shout out to look at what other women around the world have been doing around this issue of rights for domestic workers. On March 9th in Bangalore, more than 300 domestic workers and their allies staged two protests demanding rights and requesting adequate political representation and an end to sexism and violence against women. And in Beirut, on March 8th, Lebanese protested against the abuse of foreign domestic workers to mark International Women's Day. And this is a big issue there. 15% of foreign domestic workers are known to be beaten by their employers, and some are actually murdered by their employers in the process of the abuse. And the most common abuse found is withholding workers' monthly salary. So certainly women around the world, there are so many women doing this kind of domestic work. And for women around the world, they are facing similar issues around, you know, not having access to their rights, to the pay that they're due, facing abuse and violence on the job, as well as just basic exploitations. And women are certainly organizing and saying enough is enough and protesting. So I think that's exciting to hear about. And Joycelyn, you had so many interesting points you were bringing up and just letting us know what the realities are on the ground for domestic workers. And I just want to touch back on some of those issues. I'm curious, if you could tell employers three things that, you know, you would want them to do or ask them to do or do differently as employers of domestic laborers, what would those three things be?
Well, my first thing to the employers, treat your worker like you would like to be treated yourself, like a human being.
The golden rule.
That's the golden rule. And too often we tend to forget that. We want to be treated the best, but we don't care how others are being treated. One, you know the value of the work that a domestic worker does. And you should think about paying that person a livable wage, a wage where, you know, he or she can support, look after their families the best way.
Mm-hmm.
And always remember that even in the Bible, the Lord said you should work at least 6 days and rest the Sabbath day.
Mm.
Please remember, your worker deserves a day off. Some domestic workers do not even get a day off,
wow,
especially the living nannies. So, you know, these are things I would like these people to give to the workers.
One more thing, those two things. What would the third thing be?
And the next thing is to be that your children are just as important to us as if they were our own.
Mm.
We give them the love, the care, and everything that they want. You out there know that when we leave work, you even contact us at home, you know, concerning your kids,
mm-hmm,
even to find the smallest thing. And we ask you to remember these three words: dignity, respect, and fair labor standards.
Dignity, respect, and fair labor standards. Okay. I know that many listeners have babysitters and nannies and elder caregivers in their lives, and I hope that they will take note of that. If you could tell domestic workers three things that you feel they should know, what would those three things be?
Oh, domestic workers, sisters, be strong. There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm.
We are fighting today for that protection and those guidelines. And we believe, like Martin Luther King said, we will be free and a change is possible. You are the key to change, and we can change this system. The system is the thing that needs to be changed. Join with us at Domestic Workers United. Know your rights. Become involved.
Mm-hmm.
Know who you are. You know, there are rights for you. And you need to get involved with this organization to know those rights.
So be strong and know that there is hope, light at the end of the tunnel. The second would be that you are the key, and together we can change the system of exploitation. And the third thing would be get involved and learn your rights,
right,
and be a part of the movement. And I hope those are words of inspiration and hope and information for domestic workers out there. You know, one of the things that's so interesting about domestic work, like I said, there's a conversation about domestic work in the mainstream, and it tends to, it's controlled by those who employ domestic workers, and it tends to focus on what's wrong with domestic workers, you know, what's the quality of the care they give, is it, are these people who are really qualified to give this care? But the conversation we don't have is about the gender politics within the families that rely on domestic labor. And one of the things I find fascinating is that years ago, people predicted that there would be no need for domestic labor as we marched into the future with the technological advances that we have. And the reality is that the demand for domestic household labor has actually increased steadily in the decades prior to this current economic depression. And this is due to more women working and working more hours and middle and upper class families earning more money. Yet at the same time, men do less domestic work and childcare duty than women do. And at the same time that that has happened, the workload associated with raising a children and running a family has intensified because we have these super children, super family, super home life expectations. You know, that have really mushroomed over the past few decades, this sort of perfect life that we're supposed to have. And that perfect life takes a lot of work. And all of that work that's associated with caring for children and running a household with limited help from the men in these families, it falls on the quote-unquote woman of the house, so to speak, and also the domestic help to provide the labor to run that engine of this super family. And so in essence, if you look at it, we're actually using domestic labor to enable men to have limited responsibility for domestic work, while we in the United States pretend that we're approaching gender equity in our home lives and throughout the country in general, and also turn up our noses at other countries, which we say, you know, have deep gender inequities or sexism. And I'm just curious, is this something that is part of the conversation among domestic workers?
Well, we address gender issues, and, you know, this is one of the things we address. But I think that most households tend to shun away from employing men as domestic workers simply because in some households there are lots of girl children, and the nannies are faced with has a lot of chores to do, like bathing the kids and doing, you know, things that most likely you as a mother wouldn't want the employer male to do for your daughter.
No, but I think women would certainly like their husbands to help.
Yeah, what I think about this thing with husbands not helping, it's not the fault of the wives today. This is something that came through the generations.
Absolutely.
From generations. And as you know, that even like I say to the members in my organization up to recently, is that we came along believing that our place was always behind the male.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we tend to be, we came along inheriting it from our mothers and our grandparents, is that we, the women, basically had to look after the kids. You know, the men's jobs were to bring in the money mm-hmm. to support the family. But now it is all, the onus is on us to try to turn it around, you know, give the men some a set of chores in the house. Like, he can wash the dishes, but women don't want to do that. He can cook, and they have some men are great cooks, but some women don't.
I've heard.
You know, we've got to take.
I wonder if my husband's
listening. Turn the wheel around a bit, because we are women, and yes, and we have to make it known instead of saying, behind every successful man, there was a woman. We have to turn it around and say, behind every successful woman, there have been a man.
Right, because right now what's happening is behind every successful woman, there is an army of domestic workers.
Right. You
and
try to turn it around.
Right, and men still have their leisure time. I want to open the lines for listener call-in, 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. We'd certainly like to hear from domestic workers, from employers, from people who have ideas about how to improve the status of domestic workers and domestic labor in this country and abroad. You know, I think that God, there's so many issues. Domestic labor it's very intimate labor. You're in someone's home. Often when they're not there, you see how they live. You witness how family members treat each other. And you even know some of their secrets. And I'm just wondering what types of interpersonal dynamics are part of the tension in this intimacy for domestic employees?
You know, it is that you could create a bond with an employer, but it doesn't really last, because sometimes they say to you, you're part of the family.
Mm.
And at the beginning, it's normally like that.
Mm-hmm.
But times go around, you see the difference.
Right.
And if you were to speak to just 10 domestic workers, you would then realize that this is not always true. And within secrets, it's not a matter of secrets. It's a matter of, it's like being a domestic worker in a household working, and you see how families live.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you being an accountant or,
that's a great way to put it.
you know, so actually it's that matter of respect for your workplace.
Right, that confidentiality. You know? And we actually have some callers on the line, so I definitely want to open up the conversation. Hi, caller, you're on the air. Who are you and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Manhattan.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was listening to the show. Someone had called me because they said that they thought that I would be interested in this. And I certainly do agree with what the young lady is saying. And some of that is spilling over into family daycare.
In what way?
Well, family daycare, many of the immigrants are in family daycare. And these family daycare employers, they are having these workers to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to have a set of rules by the health department. However, when they are associated with an agency, the agency almost turns their back. I am an American worker, and I worked in these homes.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in the daycare settings and a church and other
not-for-profit.
But I see a lot of this is spilling over into family daycare, and I see this way of taking advantage, and it has a pulling effect on those that are Americans and those that are not Americans.
Okay, and we're going to discuss this while you're off the air. I think those are really interesting points, and that was she's one talking about the influx of immigrant labor and how people are exploiting immigrant labor within formal daycare and, in this case, home-based daycare. And then also she was raising a point about how that influx of that labor that people believe is so exploitable is affecting her as an American and affecting, I believe, her wages and her relationship with her employer. I think that's an interesting issue to bring up, is particularly with the economy shifting, you know, how are these dynamics affecting everyone in that domestic worker pool, but from those who are, you know, immigrants to those who are here without permission to those who are Americans who have been here for a long time and are seeing this shift in the labor pool. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, actually, I often say this to people, that here in America, along in this industry, it doesn't matter whether you're a citizen or immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
It's no special treatment. You're treated the same way within this industry.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't want to believe it. They feel because you're an immigrant, you're treated that way. And that's what I've been pointing out to a lot of students, because we also do student organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the issues I say. You know, it doesn't matter who you are in this industry, you're treated this way because there are no set guidelines, there's no protection, and the employers know they can do anything and get away with it.
Right, and I think that was actually part of her point, as this pool of workers who people feel more comfortable are exploiting are coming into the formal childcare market, it's affecting other workers and their level of exploitation that they're dealing with as well. So everyone is feeling the heat, I think, is what she's saying. And then we do have some other callers who I want to make sure we get their voices. Let's see. Caller, you're on the air. If you can let us know who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Nancy, and I'm calling from Queens.
Okay, great. And what is your question or comment?
And I have so much to say, but I'll try to get it. When I was raising my daughter, I was very blessed to have a woman who watched her from the time my daughter was 4 months till she was three.
Mm-hmm.
We had a mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I had a day off, and I gave her, I paid her, because
mm-hmm.
I got paid for that day.
Mm-hmm.
When I had a vacation, I gave her a week, because I got paid for that week.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where sometimes she had someone fill in, which was really wonderful. She didn't have to,
mm-hmm.
if she had to go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And like that particular individual, maybe she had a different philosophy. And this is could be where some of the dynamics come in, where someone might want to be the boss of you when you have an equal, you know, you're the employer. Like, you know, that's, I don't want to go, but the thing is you should have a mutual respect for each other. One should not be the boss of the other.
Excellent.
There was a point in my life where I had to protect my daughter and get her out of a dangerous situation with the man that I was her father, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I put myself in a situation where I had to sacrifice my income to save my family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean my daughter, not the entire family. I had mm-hmm. to get out of a negative situation. I was working with women who employed me, and I got to see the side of what it's like to be a domestic.
Mm.
This is women treating other women in... I don't know if there's some kind of hierarchy because of your financial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my education and my skills, I could work. I work in an office. I'm not like a higher echelon person, but I can make a decent wage.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that another woman, once they have you in their home.
And they have power over you.
They have power over you, right. Is willing to, like, just treat you like. Like you know you're treated being treated less, and that they're using this to lift themselves up, to feel better about themselves by putting you down.
That's right.
And of course I'm not in that situation, but that was a big eye opener for me, because you see, as an American woman, these are representing how we look around the world, and we're all not like that.
Mm.
And that really makes me angry that we're all from the same country and raised with this propaganda that we eliminated slavery in this world, and then, you know, we're all supposed to be outraged at other people being abused and violated and taken advantage. I mean, it just from domestic abuse to children being used sexually in the Netherlands, you know.
Right.
I mean, these things, this is wrong, and I mean, we have slavery going on in our own country, on our own borders, of people coming from China or wherever. And they're working in situations, they're paying off their boarding pass or whatever.
Excellent. And I have to, only because we've run out of time,
but
I would love to continue
the whole time
the conversation. But I have to actually cut you off because we've come to the end of our time on the air. And I just want to thank you so much, Nancy, for your call. It was very illuminating to hear from someone who has, you know, looked at this from both sides. And I just want to say this is Women, Body, and Soul, 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York City, live online at WBAI.org. I'm your host, Natalie Tandiway. And I want to thank you, Joycelyn Campbell of Domestic Workers United, for joining us today and really helping us to understand the status of domestic workers and the rights movement that you're organizing. And DWU can be found online at domesticworkersunited.org. And listener comments or feedback can be sent to me at wbsradio@mail.com. W like woman, B like body, S like soul, wbsradio@mail.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And if people could join us on April the 28th, that would be great to Albany.
Excellent. Go to domesticworkersunited.org for details.
Sister, you've been on my mind. Oh, sister, we're two of a kind. So, sister, I'm keeping my eyes on you. I bet you think I don't know nothing but singing the blues. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're
something too.
So shake your shimmy, sister, 'cause honey, the sug is feeling fine.
Here's the book we've all been waiting for, Mumia Abu-Jamal's Prisoners Defending Prisoners versus the USA, dedicated to the heroic jailhouse lawyers working for freedom in the hellholes of U.S. prisons. Come to the gala book party sponsored by the Prison Ministry of Riverside Church and the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal Coalition on Saturday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Riverside Church, room 411, the MLK Wing. There'll be a video with Angela Davis, who has written the foreword and opening performance by Academy Award nominee Impact Youth Repertory Theater, created by Jamal Joseph. Eddie Ellis, Ramona Africa, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., former long-term prisoner's brother Amin, and Mikel DeVoe, Paul Wright of the Prison Legal News, Pam Africa, and much, much more, including wine and cheese. Admission is free. Call 212-330-8029 or contact www.